Attention, pleasure seekers. What if I told you there was a toy that was so iconic that it practically set the standard for all my favorite products? Allow me to introduce or reintroduce to you the Magic Wand. Dubbed the Cadillac of Vibrators, the Magic Wand is more than just a toy. It's a culture icon, a symbol of power and unapologetic pleasure. I mean, do you know any other toys that have been praised in Time magazine? Didn't think so. With a unique rumble that resonates deep within, the Magic Wand Original is not just a product, it's a trusted confidant. And it's a sure thing. Never had an orgasm? Try a magic wand. Never given your party a full body massage? Try the magic wand. Listen, it's rightfully earned accolades like Vibrator of the Year for decades. I've been so obsessed with my magic wand, I even drilled holes in my bedside table so that she's always next to me in case I need her. Well, that was years ago. Because now there are multiple iterations of the magic wand, allowing you to pick whatever model fits your lifestyle. You can go wireless with the magic wand rechargeable, tiny with the magic wand mini, or micro. Micro's really mini. Or go for variety with the Magic Wand Plush. The best part though, all of them have the same powerful orgasmic rumble that made the original so popular. So if you're ready to make some magic, visit sexwithemily.com/magicwand and discover why the Magic Wand continues to cast a spell on the world. Magic Wand, not just a vibrator, an icon of pleasure.
This is really hard. It took me like 40 years to do this. Okay. But tell me. You literally have to learn how to walk down the street and be like, I'm the shit. Like literally, you have to find a way to screen out the noise. Because at the end of the day, the body that you're walking in right now is the body you need to use to get where you want to be. So if you're constantly beating it down because you don't like the way it looks, it's going to be really hard to climb that mountain.
You're listening to Sex with Emily. I'm Dr. Emily, and I'm here to help you prioritize your pleasure and liberate the conversation around sex. Sean T is the host of the podcast Trust and Believe, a world-renowned fitness trainer and a professional dancer, not to mention a wonderfully sex-positive man. But it was a journey. I repeat, a journey to get there. On today's show, Sean T gives me his genius sex and arousal hacks, how he and his partner keep things interesting after 12 years and two kids, plus his favorite kink. He also opens up about surviving childhood sexual assault, how he came to understand and accept his sexuality, and the trauma work he did to get to where he is today. Trust me, if you need an instant pick-me-up around your sex, sexuality, or your body, this is the conversation for you. Intentions with Emily. For each episode, I want to start off by setting an intention for the show. And I do it, I encourage you to do the same. So when you're listening, what do you want to get out of the episode? How could it help you? Well, my intention is for you to feel a sense of possibility listening to Sean T. After you listen, ask yourself, what's one thing, just one thing I can do today to love my body and show appreciation for it? Please rate and review Sex with Emily wherever you listen to the show. My new article, These Are the 5 Arousal Styles, Which One Are You?, is up at sexwithemily.com. And check out my YouTube channel, social media, and TikTok. It's all at Sex with Emily for more sex tips and advice. You want to ask me questions? Well, leave me your questions or message me at sexwithemily.com/askemily or call my hotline, 559-TALK-SEX or 559-825-5739. Always include your name, your age, where you live, and how you listen to the show. Oh, and you can totally change your name or choose to remain anonymous. All right, everyone, enjoy this episode. Sean T is the host of the podcast Trust and Believe with Sean T, where he helps listeners build confidence to live their best life possible. As a world-renowned fitness trainer, his at-home workouts like Insanity, T25, and Hip Hop Abs have been household names. As a former stage dancer for celebrities, author, and activist, Sean T has inspired millions around the world that it's never too late to live the life of your dreams. Find more Sean on social media at Sean T, or on his website, SeanTLife.com. Sean T, welcome to the show. Thank you. We're just going to get right into it. But you are a beloved podcast host and fitness celebrity, and you motivate people. And now you're motivating me. I want to talk to you. We're going to get into all your story, but let's talk about this real quickly. So you've been married for how long?
I've been married for almost 10 years. I've almost been 10 years married. We are in almost 12 years together. So October of 2022 will be 10 and 12, if that makes sense.
Okay. So the arousal episode, so what really excited you was thinking about how, because I love this episode just came out. So what I love is like thinking about, because couples are together for a while, right? The honeymoon phase is over and you got to think about like, when do I want sex and what turns me on? So what you're saying, just to bring everyone up to speed, is that you thought about it. You're like, oh, I get turned on when I'm looking at, when I'm watching media. You mean like watching porn or watching?
Ethical porn. I'm a keep it real kind of person here, Emily. So just get ready.
I'm in. Yeah.
Also, I am into, like, when I travel and I'm away, my husband and I send each other either photos or videos of ourselves, because that, it's just like so stimulating to me. It just like, it connects me at a different level. And I think that when I was hearing you talk about conversation and like keeping up with each other and kind of like, how's your week been or whatever, we work together. So I don't find that to be anyway stimulating, because we talk all the time.
Yeah.
And we're really close. You know, we're super, super close, and we have no secrets in our relationship. So for me, when it's time for arousal, I want to go to the arousal state. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. But wait, I love what you're saying, because what you're saying is like, we have our relationship of 12 years, but you work together every day. You're talking like, did you get that video up, or what's happening with the contracts or whatever it is, whatever you guys do together. But then you're like, and this is for someone I got to like be into and be attracted to. So you've created naturally these other things that keep the arousal going. So it makes sense that when you're away, you're like, here's a sexy video of me, you know, whatever, in the shower, doing my thing. It separates that, and we need that spark. We need to be aroused and connected. So I think that that's really brilliant on your own. You've found ways to keep it hot.
You mentioned, you know, ask how long we've been together. And so we have been together for 12 years, and there's never been a lull in our sex life. I would say maybe a 3-month lull when we first had our twin boys. It was kind of like, what the heck? But I was still like, no, we might be fighting a lot because we're not sleeping, but we're still going to get this done, because I just don't have time to like have the buildup. So we still in our way stay connected in that way. So many people, as you know, talk about the honeymoon phase of a relationship. And some people also say sex isn't that important. I'm like, yes, it is. Absolutely. If when we got together, like, yeah, I mean, we don't have time to have sex 6 times a day.
Right.
Like when we first met. However, I'm one of the reasons why I wanted to be with you initially was because I find you extremely attractive and I wanted to, you know, be intimate with you. So it was really important for me. So anyway.
No, it's important, because otherwise you're roommates and business partners. Like, what's the point? And it takes work. So I love that you knew that. And I'm kind of amazed that you had twin boys and you only had a few months downtime. Because what I'm talking to you was like, it's been 6 months, it's been 9 months. It's hard having young kids, young toddlers around. And so sounds like you guys have been through it. But of course, it's important, and it ebbs and flows, right?
Just talking about ebbs and flows, it's interesting. I think maybe the longest we went, I don't even think it, we've ever gone 2 weeks without. But I think that the ebbs and flows for us is the stress level of work. That is the one thing, or my anxiety, one of the two. Because here's what's so interesting, and I promise you, this is so true. Scott has never said no to me. Like, if I was in a state of wanting to, you know, have sex, literally never, not once. Me, on the other hand, I'm like, I'm too stressed out for this. Like, I just, I don't have time. He has never, ever, ever said no. Even to the point where there would be points where he would want to be intimate and I wouldn't. And it was really because I just didn't have the energy to give. And so, you know, in your episode, when you were talking about pleasuring yourself is okay, you know, that if you prefer masturbation over being with someone, I just thought that was super profound, because unknowingly Scott made a way, because I was like, I would prefer that, but I also don't feel like doing that right now. So there would be many times, because I just hold more stress and anxiety in my life, where Scott would pleasure me and be like completely fine with that, even though like I didn't want to return the favor. And what's really like crazy about that is like one of the promises we made to each other earlier in our marriage. It's like, okay, we'll always return a favor. So then I had to say, well, I can't return a favor tonight, but I'll return a favor later. So I think that's kind of how we navigate the ebbs and flows, if you will.
No, that is a beautiful example. And I just want to punctuate what you're saying here, that it's like, a lot of times we're all adults, we're exhausted, we have jobs, you have kids, things going on in our life. Sometimes it's hard to give your partner the full experience and then be like, okay, now I'll take mine. Like, who's got time anymore, right? So to say that you will get yours, might be tomorrow, might be this weekend, but to feel that satisfaction of knowing that he pleased you and that his is going to come. And it sounds like you guys have the most excellent communication because he knows that you're not going to be like, you know, not return the favor, essentially. I have a massage table here that I use. The other night, like, my boyfriend came over and he's like, get out the massage table. And he just like went, like, he's like, it's all about you. And for like an hour, like, it was unbelievable. And I'm like, okay. And now I felt great. I didn't have to do anything. And now I'm like, okay, this weekend, I'm going to bring out the table for him. He knows that. So it's the same thing. And I don't hear that often from couples. I think it doesn't really, people don't really get it or make sense. So I love that you are just illustrating this right away, because I think it's, we're all tired, exhausted, other things going on. It's a great way to prioritize your relationship. What I love also with your audience, you talk a lot about therapy and how therapy has been really helpful for you and to prioritize it. So have you had that in your relationship as well? Have you guys gone to therapy together?
We've never been to therapy together. We both have gone to therapy prior to knowing each other. And I think that was a really great foundation. Growing up gay is, everybody has an issue that they probably need to go to therapy for. I think knowing that we both grew up gay and me being sexually abused and, you know, Scott going through things as a professional athlete and having to like kind of hide who he was, we kind of both been through a lot prior to our marriage. And having been to therapy, we come in with a lot of great conversation, like knowing ourselves well. But I definitely want to caveat this to say, like, yes, we fight. Yes, we have arguments. Like, we do not have the perfect relationship in terms of, like, you know, it's the white picket fence. But back to what you said, we do have really, 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 really great communication. And I do want to pinpoint that even though we've been to therapy and even though we've never had to go to couples therapy, there are times where even with great communication, you still need time. You can still be upset. You can still be angry. You can still need time apart to come back together. Everyone thinks that even going to therapy or having that perfect communication doesn't allow for you to be able to still have to deal with your emotions or to still be angry or not want to forgive right away. But I also think that that is the great roller coaster ride of a relationship, because Scott would tell you, he's like, you love confrontation. I'm like, no, I just want to get to the meat of the problem, because I just believe that if we solve the depths of this issue, then like when we get to the next hill and we like, you know, at that roller coaster, is going to be much more thrilling because we have like worked through something already. But we've never had to go to therapy. And we actually had a really, it wasn't intense. It was a really open conversation a couple of weeks ago, because I still go to therapy every week and I feel crazy if I don't. And I asked him, hey, do you want to go back? And I guess in some way, therapy may have stressed him out even more because of all he had to work through. So we just kind of talked about him going again as well, because he's not an expressive person. He's more of like, I'm going to hold this inside. So I was like, you know, maybe you need to go and it'll help you out.
The main thing is, I think when couples like learn how to, there's two things. I guess when you go into therapy as a couple, you know, learning how to communicate, how to get through those hard things where you want to talk or he doesn't want to talk about it and why, but then also our individual therapy to work on our own traumas and our own issues, which it sounds like you've done a lot of that as well. And I'm actually working on a book right now, and I wanted to ask you some things. So I explore this idea of like sex self-acceptance, like how when we truly accept ourselves, and, you know, that's sort of like have more confidence, which I know confidence is kind of this elusive thing we're always working on, but how it informs your sex life. So for a lot of people, that means like learning to accept or even love or like their body when they have like body hate. But I want to hear from you on that point, like your own journey to self-acceptance around your body. And then also, yeah, I know you motivate people in this way as well. So maybe you could talk about that, what it's been like for you.
That is such an interesting question, because for me, body awareness started when I was young, because I was sexually abused. Like, I would literally be in my bed at 8 years old, from the time I was 8 to the time I was 12. I would be asleep and my abuser would come in starting off by massaging my butt. So it's like this really weird, like I didn't have a great relationship with my body really, not till like really, really recently. Because I've done a couple podcasts on just like accepting my body. And it, a lot of times it had nothing to do with weight necessarily. I think it just had to deal with like the culmination of just like being okay. And I would give you a little point and then I'll go into like body image more. But even in our relationship up until like, I would say like maybe 5 years ago, like if Scott, maybe six, it was probably a little more now, but if, when Scott would come up to me in the bathroom and he would like touch my butt without me knowing it, I would freak out. But you want to know what's like such the dichotomous of all that. Like if I didn't feel good in my body, like my chest and my arms and my abs, like I know the one thing that I loved was my ass. So it's kind of like this thing of like, I don't want you to touch it. That feels good to me. And it was really weird because I really, that was like the one thing that I'm like, okay, if all else is not feeling great, I'm going to turn around before I get in the shower and be like, boom, the booty's right. And then being able to marry those things together while accepting that my husband wanted to touch me there, also knowing that it is my favorite part. It was very healing. So to your point about how body and body image goes into confidence, I think that you really have to find out there's a why you don't like something about yourself or why you don't favor it. I think the most important thing, especially in my line of work, is that we have been, I don't want to use the word brainwashed because I think it's overused, but we have been marketed to think that like a certain body type is the best kind of body type. And let me, Emily, I'm going to get close to the camera if you, except y'all watching this. My husband's like super ripped. He's very attractive. You know, he's 6 foot. But I'm like, if we're walking down the street and there's like what people call thick, T-H-I-C-C, like a thick guy or even girls, I'm so attracted to that too. I'm so attracted to so many different body types. And so I just want to hopefully motivate people out there. If you're looking in the mirror and you don't like what you see because you're comparing it to what you think other people want to see, in addition to that, you might be comparing it to what society thinks that you are compared to maybe your spouse, right? Like you might, your spouse might go to the gym all the time and maybe you go to the gym once in a while. You might not be as ripped or whatever. That, you kind of have to let that go because what society thinks is beautiful is not the only thing that's beautiful. It's just a one thing that, you know, people think. And I was actually watching this. I was on TikTok the other day and I was looking at this TikTok and that point came up. There was this, there was a guy who was clearly kind of like in bodybuilding. And then there was a woman who's like, no, I don't work out. And so she got a lot of hate messages. Like, how'd you get him? Girl, he's going to cheat on you. Like, oh my God, she must be a sugar mama. Like he, like the, these comments were so disgusting and it made me so angry. I couldn't say anything. Cause you know, I was scrolling. I was like, oh, I want to comment. But I think that again, and now I'm gonna be, keep it very real. All these people say like, oh my God, I can't believe that person with that person. Or you're not this, you're not that. And I'm like, you don't look like that either. You don't even look like what you're saying is beautiful. So you don't have it all together. Your diet is not 100% perfect. You don't go to the gym all the time. You've had times where you fell off the wagon. So why are you even acting like that shouldn't even be? You know, and I think a lot of people dive into this health thing, meaning, oh, you should take care of your body. Excuse, but I'm going to be like, shut up. Like, just stop right now because you don't have it all together either. Like, I always say to people, we're all in the closet about something. Like, we all have something to, like, figure out in our lives.
Yeah, I heard you on my friend Jordan Harbinger's podcast, like, a few years ago. And you said that. And I actually wrote down that quote that we're all in the closet about something. And it's so true. We really are. We all have things that we hide that we're shameful of. I think it's interesting. I was actually listening to another one of your podcasts that you did with Chip Hoffa, who was saying the opposite of pride is shame, right? And I always say the opposite of pleasure is shame. We often think like, I don't deserve pleasure because I haven't worked out today or I didn't finish this thing. So I'm not going to like have sex or masturbate or shop or eat or whatever my pleasure is, right? And so, yeah, there's just so much goddamn shame around this too. So I feel like it's shame and it's like we're in the closet about things. And I just feel like that I love that what you're talking about. You're just being so real and so authentic about all of these things that we want to wrapping here together. So going back to self-acceptance, and I totally get what you're saying, like looking in the mirror and thinking like, you have to look like a certain type. Like in the 90s, it was all about like the skinny, thin models. And now it's like more bodies have changed throughout time. And now it's really just like, it should always be what we like about ourselves, right? How we feel our best, how what makes us feel the most confident. And you're in this field, like what are some things, like I tell people, like look in the mirror, do some exposure exercises where you're walking around, you're writing affirmations. Because I do think it's the way you carry yourself, the way that you care for yourself, you eat, you work out. But like, what is that switch? Like, how does it work? And I also think you can answer this too. Like, it's a process, right? Because you probably have days where you're not loving your body, right? Even though it's what you look amazing, it's what you do. So what are some tips to this?
I think that one thing that I know that makes me feel good right away, regardless of what my muscle tone is or what my skin tone is, or if I have a pimple on my face or whatever. Yeah, I got one right there. Maybe it's gone, almost gone. But dressing, like, oh my gosh. Go, if you have a little bit of money, go to the mall, put like wear something that makes you feel confident. And I used to love that show, What Not to Wear. I don't know if you remember, but my favorite part of that show is when the stylist would take these people into the in front of the mirror, and that's where they would be super emotional because they weren't dressing for their body, but most importantly, they weren't dressing for their confidence. So the first thing you can do that you can change right away is go, if you have a little bit of money, is to save up and get an outfit that's, or a couple outfits that's going to make you feel good, because that's going to take you away from just the skin you're in and the muscle tone. It creates an outer layer of beauty that you can design and you can look great. And I'm like, go to the makeup counter, go get your face beat. You know what I'm saying? Get your hair done, get your nails done, you know, do some things that make you feel good that have nothing to do with like doing a push-up or lifting weights or eating a salad. And so when you start to do that, you're able to, it's not covering it up, it's just finding a way to find your beauty. So that's like the first thing I say to do. The second thing, which is really, really hard, is learn how to give zero fucks. Like, this is really hard. It took me like 40 years to do this. Okay. But
tell me.
You literally have to learn how to walk down the street and be like, I'm the shit. Like, literally, you have to find a way to screen out the noise. Because at the end of the day, the body that you're walking in right now is the body you need to use to get where you want to be. So if you're constantly beating it down because you don't like the way it looks, it's going to be really hard to climb that mountain. So even on days when I'm like, I don't feel that great, I'm like, listen, these shoulders are going to be up. This chest is going to be prepped out. You're lucky I don't have a pair of heels. For women, wear a pair of heels. I swear, wear a pair of heels with tights that you walk in the gym with. Like, another thing I'll say is walking out of your house, if you live in a neighborhood where you can walk out of your house and you walk to your car, those first steps that you take out of your house, even if nobody's out, none of your neighbors are out watching, like just walk out the house, open the door and be like, yes. You almost have to act like you walked on stage. You'd be like, I'm here. Like, I'm letting y'all know I'm here. It's the foundation of your day. I literally promise you that even if you feel like really not, if you don't feel really great about what you look or feel like right now, if you say that when you walk out the door, you will slay the game for at least, you know, 15 minutes, right? It's more than you did before. But like, now I want to get to the body, to the actual body. This is where I do like the alarms. I'm like, tough trainer alert.
I love I'm this. Like, this is good. I'm feeling this in my body. I'm like, next time I walk to my car, I can't wait to walk to my car today.
You're lucky I'll ask you to get up now and go walk to the
car. I want to go walk to my car. I want to do a redo of them already from this morning. Okay.
I want to get to the body really quickly. And that is, first of all, don't put on your vision board another person's body. Like, this is the gateway to being unsuccessful, I believe. Put your body on there. Put, maybe it's a time where, you know, you felt like a little bit more confident. Put that on your vision board. But here's the tough part. Do the work. Don't be a complaining Raymond. Because if you're complaining every day when you wake up like, oh my gosh, I don't feel good, but you're not going to the gym. Or, oh my God, I can't believe I look like this and I don't like what I look, but you're not eating to get you to that point. Or you can go to the doctor and check your thyroid. It's not always about lifting weights or the way you eat. Maybe you need to go get some blood work done. Maybe you need to go to the dermatologist because it could just be your face is not feeling bright. There's so many different things you can do, but you have to do the work and you have to be very proactive to make these changes that you want.
That's such great advice. It's so true. We have to care about our mental health, our physical health, you know, being more connected to our bodies. I love the actual embodiment exercise of like, literally, like I can see that now, like giving zero fucks, walking outside, like not keeping your head down, putting on something that makes you feel good and rocking it. Like that's so much about style, fashion, like whatever you feel good in, you can rock that and walk it. And I love this advice. I want to go back to something you were talking about, embodiment, which I talk about a lot on the show about like being connected. A lot of us are disconnected. And I think you see that too during your work of training people. And we're so focused on the end goal. Like I'm going to lose 5 pounds. I'm going to be ripped. But it's like a disconnect, right? From like our head to our heart. Like it's the way we breathe shallow sometimes. And so what has been that journey for you? Because I know you talked about your growing up and you had sexual abuse growing up. And then I think what you were saying that when you're partner grabs your butt, that at first you might have a trigger back to your childhood, right? Mm-hmm. Abuse that you said happened in that way. And so I'm wondering what that process was of sort of learning to kind of connect into your body again and disassociating it from the trauma.
Yeah, it was really, really interesting because there was definitely a response, like a physical response of fear, perspiration, anger. Was like the first thing, and it made me feel really bad, especially when my spouse did it. I have friends that would like to see me and they would just smack me in the butt. They're like, oh my gosh, it's so amazing. Right? And I would just like, I would basically relive those moments of being abused. But the process of it, it was therapy. And I know it sounds very redundant for people, but it was talking through the layers of what it felt like. And I'm going to go here, Emily. My first day, the very first time I was sexually abused, my molester, who was a man, tried to put his penis in my butt. So like my entire, that entire region, what I learned through therapy is like clenched and stressed. When I was a kid, and I'm gonna go here because I want people to really understand the depths of this. Like I would not go to the bathroom a number two for like 8 or 9 days. And when I would go, it would just be a tremendous amount of pain, right? So like I went through this entire process of really being clenched and stressed to make the first step was being able to be like, okay, like having a healthy digestive system, understanding that I had to like really have a good relationship with going to the bathroom, which people probably never experienced before. Then the next part was, you know, accepting my body and knowing that this is a part of your body and it's not separated from everything else because my butt was separated. It was a fear. It was a trigger. It was this thing. That's when I really got into the fitness industry and I was like, this is a part of my genetic makeup. And, you know, I would used to joke around with my mom. I used to be like, thanks mom for the booty. It was like those little silly things that made me accept, okay, this is it. Then there was the getting past the sexual abuse when it came to sex. And so this was huge. So for the longest time in my relationship, I didn't enjoy gay male sex. You use your bottom. And I didn't enjoy being a bottom. Like there was no way I could relax into that. Like even after I got okay with my husband touching my butt, I was like, okay, I'll do this for you. But it was always just like a moment of non-pleasure. But the emotional pleasure of pleasing my husband, it was like so crazy. It was always so emotional. To the point where he helped me work through that. And now I'm completely free of like, what you want to do? How you want to touch it? You want to lay on it? You want to use it as a pillow? You want to use it as a night pillow? Like, so it was all of that work and all of that process. And but the phases of it were minor. And me telling Scott, okay, you can touch my butt now. And then having relapse moments of that, of like, and then getting to the point where I would have an internal relapse moment, but I wouldn't show it to him. And that was the next level of saying, okay, like, this is okay. Like, you're not hurt. You're not in a dark room anymore. Like, to the point now where I'm just like, I cannot believe you didn't touch my butt today. I'm over it.
Thank you so much for sharing the story because sexual trauma is so common. And I hear from a lot of people like your story. And then I hear from a lot of vulva owners who are like, you know, have sexual pain, right? Because it's a clenching and it's a constricting. So if they've had sexual assault or trauma, they have something called vaginismus or vestibulodynia, and there's all these nerve endings in their whole life. Like, it's painful. And until you go into therapy and understand, for me and for many people, EMDR therapy, trauma therapy has been helpful. I'm not sure what it sounds like, talking through and just noticing the parts. So, and noticing where you have the pain, and then it's all possible. So what a great example for people who are still sort of working through a lot of this stuff. Because if you don't deal with it, though, in therapy, it really just does, you know, whatever you resist persists. And it really would stay with you if you hadn't done this work and had a loving partner that you could actually work through the stages, because it's not, you don't just decide and then it's gone. So thank you for taking the time to explain that. I do appreciate that a lot. After the break, Sean shares his tips for keeping his sex life hot in his long-term relationship. There's nothing quite like sinking your teeth into a good sandwich. But listen, carb guilt is real. I'm someone who's very invested in my health, and I like to get my carbs from oats and beans and fruits and not bread. But I love bread. So here's my hack. Thanks to Hero Bread, you can enjoy your favorite bready delights without the carb consequences. Hero Bread has turned those carby, empty calorie bread products into fluffy, delicious breads that boast 0 to 1 net carbs per serving, 0 grams of sugar, and are packed with loads of fiber and protein. The first time I tried their white bread, I was skeptical. Could it really taste good with such impressive nutritional stats? Well, I'm pleasantly surprised to say it absolutely does. The texture is just phenomenal. It's like this soft, airy, and it just toasts up like a dream. I've whipped up everything from grilled cheese to PB&J and even made enchiladas, wraps, and tacos with their tortillas. Each time, Hero Bread has been a game changer. And here's the kicker. Despite its light texture and great taste, Hero Bread fits perfectly into my health goals. It's been adding more fiber to my diet while keeping the sugar at bay. Whether I'm packing a picnic lunch, planning a road trip snack, which I often do, or prepping French toast for breakfast, Hero Bread is my go-to. So whether you're craving a classic sandwich, a burger, or a hearty bun, or even indulging in a low net carb croissant, Hero Bread is something for everyone. And I highly recommend checking their monthly small batch drops out so you can try goodies like the 1 gram net carb Hero Cheddar Biscuit and so much more. You won't believe what they have. So you ready to kick carb guilt to the curb? Head over to hero.co and snag 10% off your order with the code Emily. That's Emily at hero.co. I want to also go back to something else, talking about pride and shame, and it is Pride Month, and I've been thinking a lot about shame in my life with pleasure, and I'm wondering if you could just talk to me, like, have pride and shame showed up in your life in ways that you want to talk about?
Yeah, to be very honest, I haven't really connected to shame very well. I don't think it was a part of like my emotional state. For me, it was always fear. And so it was like fear and stress and anxiety. I've never been like a person to feel shameful. However, I will touch on it a little bit, you know, within my experience, especially when it comes to pride and being gay. And I think that when it comes to body image, whether when it comes to expressing who you truly are, instead of immediately saying, this is me, this is the cards I've been dealt, this is where my brain lies, this is what my life experience is, and instead of saying, I'm going to really enjoy this because this is who I am, we go with, for me, it's fear, but I guess it's very similar to shame. We go to the thing of what people won't like, why it is a bad thing to be like this. And most of the time when we go to shame, it's another person's view. It's another person's opinion. It's another person's judgment of us. Unless you literally did something that you you should be ashamed of that. Like if you slighted someone, if you lied to someone, if you stole something, if you told a white lie that impacted somebody in a really great way, should you feel shameful of that? Yes, because you know every action causes a reaction. But who you truly are is not an action. Who you truly are is who you truly are. And so if you never did anything to hurt anyone, you should find a way to change shame to like understanding who you are and embracing the other side of that, which is truly greatness.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's true. And I see what you're saying too, the connection between shame and fear. I can relate a lot to fear and anxiety. That's kind of like my default. I always say fear is false evidence appearing real.
Right. Yes. Let's go.
It's so true though. It's like, none of this is real. We're making this up. So how do you deal with your anxiety?
I went through a lot. So mostly, I was like super, like tons of anxiety. Like I would go in these, like what I like to call tornadoes, and I would create these experiences and I create outcomes. I could tell the future. I probably in my head could have made billions of dollars. I'm telling everybody like, this is going to happen in your life. Cause you know, with anxiety, you're only going to one place and you're like, this is going to happen. And you try to prove to yourself that this is going to be, but really what I did when it came to anxiety and stuff is like, what are the facts? You don't feel sick. You haven't had any symptoms. If the facts are reading this way, why are you going to the other way? And so that's kind of how I was able to deal with it. Obviously, therapy is like, again, important. Or journaling. I know we say therapy a lot. Some people get a lot from writing stuff down, just like seeing their thoughts. You know, when I was younger, I used to be like, oh my God, my friend, you have a diary. And now I'm like, damn, I should have had a diary. Like it would have helped. One of the first things is really accepting the anxiety, accepting the fear, accepting what it is that's happening and knowing your physical and mental response to it. Because if you don't really connect to it and understand why you're in that situation in the first place, it's going to be really hard to change it. It's like saying, well, I'm, you know, some people who may, their heart may not be healthy. It's like, my heart is fine. Like, you know, I eat a salad, but you're also eating pizza every day, right? It's like, you have to accept like, oh, then you have to now start to do something to change it. So I think just like accepting and knowing where that anxiety comes from, which again, helps a lot in therapy, then you can start to make an action plan to get out of that. But for me, it's just like telling myself, these are the facts, Sean. And I used to lose sleep. Like every time I would get like a blood test or like go to the doctor, I would lose sleep until like a result came back. I wouldn't sleep for days. I would be like, oh my gosh. And now I'm like, what are you doing to yourself?
I want to ask you though about this too. We talk about the mental health and stuff that we're struggling with, but what is the connection you see between sexual health and physical health? Like the people that you work with over time, or even yourself, do you see a connection about people who start to get better shape or taking care of themselves, how they feel sexually?
Yeah, definitely. I've heard people say, and the thousands of people that I've trained or impacted their lives through physical exercise, it really started with confidence. And confidence is a root to so many incredible things. And definitely one of those things, people said, I felt confident, which leads them to wear a two-piece bathing suit or just a bathing suit that they find themselves to be super attractive in, some more skin-revealing clothes. And all of that, whether you're in a relationship or you're single, is going to draw more eyes to you, which is going to make you get more compliments a lot of times, which then makes you feel more attractive, which then makes you want to be sexual. And then you can open yourself up to that. When you feel really good in your own skin, the next point is like feeling good naked. Because I think the other thing is people find a lot of fear in being naked is taboo. You know, we take pictures of our babies like, oh my God, look at the little butt or look at the little feet. And then like at some point, it's like, oh my God, you're showing too much. I'm like, why? Why am I showing too much? Because I think, again, I believe, not that I say we should all walk around the streets naked. I wouldn't be mad. Not to say that we should do that. However, I do believe that, you know, being able to express yourself and express your body is truly a gateway to finding your way through better sexual health, sexual freedom. Like, oh my goodness. I just think it's like to my point about my butt. Like I go downstairs every day. Right now, we're staying at my in-laws' house. They don't live there. But before my kids get up, I go down and I do my shake and all my supplements and my pills and all the stuff that I take in the morning. And I always take a video for my husband. And then I get to the gym later and then I send him a video. And so it's like this really cool thing of like for me, or hopefully you out there, to wanting to show your body once you get to that point. Because once you have that confidence, then it's going to lead to better sexual health. It's going to lead you, if you have a partner, to want to share more of your body with them, even if it's through media, and setting up some encounters later on. So it's like all of these things. So me and my husband, I'll tell you a little story. Oh, Emily, you gotta come close to the camera, girl. So my husband and I, this kind of all goes into the body thing, knowing how I felt before with my body. And then it led to, I set up a photo shoot for me and my husband. I was like, okay, we're gonna do this photo shoot. Don't think I'm crazy, because I'm always the one that, you know, has some ridiculous experience. So I'm like, we're gonna do this photo shoot. I really trust this photographer. He was recommended to me by whatever. And we had a photo shoot where we were full on intimate. It wasn't video, it was all photo. Like, but we went through the whole from start to finish. And the photographer was like, you know, I want you guys to look at each other, like talk to each other. Then it was the kissing and the making out and everything else. I'll, you know, let your imagination flow. And the reason why I wanted to do that is because we're building a new home. It's almost ready. So what I wanted to do in our bedroom, I have like all the lights preset for photos that are going to go around our room. And so they're going to be two-sided frames. One side of frame is just going to be just us together, like, you know, just nice photos. The other side of frame is going to be photos from that photo shoot where you flip them over. Don't worry, my kids won't be able to reach them.
It'll be really love high. It. It's going to be like on a set when it comes down to like the time the two of you, it's going to flip.
So what the goal is, at night, if one person wants to feel intimate, you go in and you flip it around. So when the other person comes in the room, now it might not be a full on sex, but you're basically telling that person, hey, I want to be intimate tonight. And, you know, then you can discuss like, oh, I'm tired, but I'll pleasure you. Or how about we introduce this toy? I think we probably got like 5 boxes of toys that we haven't used before. So it's like, so it's just a way. Because I'm stimulated by media, which is why I thought about that, which is why I'm like so happy I'm talking to you. But another idea that someone gave me before is they would just have a little glass on their like bureau or dresser or whatever, or a nightstand or wherever. And they would have another like little closed box of marbles. And if depending on how many marbles they put into the glass is what they wanted. Maybe they wanted to just have an intimate conversation. Maybe they wanted to have oral sex, maybe they wanted to have a full-on sexual experience, maybe they wanted to, it was telling them to go out on a date. And the reason why I wanted to tell that and answer your question about being sexual with your body is like, for me to be able to take those photos with him, have somebody there, was like kind of a full circle moment.
That is so innovative. First of all, I mean, thank you so much for sharing that. That is such a beautiful story, because I just think that anything that couples can do, like I like to think about like arousal hacks or ways that couples can communicate a lot better. Like, look, the pictures are flipped around or the marble's out of the jar. I have some friends who just like know, like when the light by her nightstand is off or his, you know, whoever's light is on or off, it shows that they want to have sex, they don't want to have sex. Let's, you know, we don't just need to use words to communicate, right? There's other ways and it's fun. It becomes like a game. Like I want to do the photo shoot. Like it's such a beautiful idea. And you are aroused, but you're also so true to yourself. What I love, Sean, is that you said you're aroused by media. Now it's your own media in your room. Like you really are creating a life that is so supportive of nurturing your relationship and your family life. It's just, it's really healthy.
Thank you. I did want to share one other thing.
Yeah.
Before I forget what you said about, is it your boyfriend or your husband?
My boyfriend, yeah.
Your boyfriend. Well, your boyfriend pulled out the massage table. So we have 2 types of massage tables. Okay. But anyway, so the second one, so I used to do this thing. Me and my husband call each other Bayballs. That's our nickname. It's crazy. It doesn't matter why, but we call each other Bayballs. And so there would be points before where it wouldn't be like a lull in our sexual, but we wanted to create something more fun. So we would create something called the Bayballs Spa. This is before we had kids. He would come in the house and he would see a robe on the banister. And if he came in the house and saw a robe on the banister, he knew to go upstairs and take a shower. And then I would create this spa downstairs and I would have my media on the big screen TV. I would have the massage table out. He would come down. I would have a drink. We would sit. We would talk about media or like we would talk about like some sort of, you know, fantasy or something. And then it would, you know, so I don't know. I just really like creating an experience because I found out too many people are like, oh, we don't have sex anymore. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like there's so many fun things to do.
So many fun things to do. Fantasy, role play, right? And so you, is that kind of your role in it, that you kind of bring up the fantasy part, or like, I'm picturing this happening or that happening, or is that?
Oh yeah, yeah. I am definitely the one that is like, I'm the one.
Okay.
I'm the one. And at first when I started bringing up things, like he would be like, oh my gosh, like, are we supposed to do that? And I'm like, who makes the rules for our relationship? I'm like, we make the rules. And then once we started doing it, I mean, our sex life is so fun. And I truly believe, while I know you have to love your partner, you definitely respect them. I know people grow apart for many different reasons, but I do believe that sex can be one of those glue points in your relationship, because that intimacy, that conversation, that communication that happens through sexual activity, it creates another thing that it really creates in your sex life, is you kind of get over those insecurities about, I know a lot of people are jealous, right? It's like, oh, well, you looked at that girl, you looked at that guy. I find it hot, one, when somebody looks at Scott, and I definitely find it hot if he tells me that he thinks somebody else is attractive, because our sex life is so good. I know I can make him climax. I know we have that. I'm not intimidated by him thinking that somebody else is, you know, attractive. I'm just not. I'm like, well, what would you do with that person? Or like, you know, like, I'm more like, well, let's talk about it.
Right, exactly. That is a process. I totally... God, I wish more people could be in this place. I share this with you, that I think it's really hot to talk about it with a partner. And I think you have to be in a relationship with someone that you trust and that you're committed, and you know that they're coming home to me. And that's fuel for like talking about it in the bedroom, being like, that's so hot when you saw that girl. And it's all hot. But it's such a process, I think, of, it's not for every relationship. Because again, if jealousy is a big part in your relationship and your partner, that's not going to be the dynamic. But you guys have... Again, you make the rules for your relationship, which I love, and which we all do. We all make the rules for our relationship.
Exactly.
I always tell people, there's no sex police that are going to come knocking on your door and be like, oh, you weren't supposed to do that. Like, that doesn't happen, right? So we get to decide. But it is true that there's so much fodder out there, that the thing that, you know, when we say that sex gets boring and couples have such a challenge, usually it's because there's no novelty. There's no spontaneity. I'm not trying anything new. It's like the same old thing. So to always be able to create a new experience by using the media or telling a story or giving a massage is just, that's the fodder that I think a lot of couples need, you know, and the great communication to surround that.
Yeah. I mean, I wanted to say too, I definitely don't feel like it's for everybody. Like, everything we're talking about, it's not. Like, your relationship, you might be completely like, this is what we like, and we like a date night, we like a glass of wine, I'm like, cool. If that's working for you, absolutely amazing. I just want to be able to open people's minds to the fact that just exploring new ways. Sometimes we get into things, I'm like, I ain't into that. You know what I mean? Like, I was not into that. And he was, or we both were like, we're never doing that again.
Exactly. You know, that's how it should be. It's like a play-by-play. Like, after. You get in the shower after. You're like, what do you think about that? That's exactly what happened today. That's what we do. I'm like, that was... He's like, so what do you think when I said that? I'm like, that wasn't the hottest part. But I love the part before that. And we like break it down. Like a sports match or something.
That's so funny. I'm like, when you choked me, I wasn't into that. Have a minute.
But like, you were pretty great, but the thumb was a little bit further over my trachea. I kind of was going to gag there. That wasn't great. But the choke before that, way hotter than that.
That was a good one.
And then you always just like talk about and iterate upon, like, this is how the sex life could be. I love that you're illustrating this, because I think we're so in our heads about sex, and most people aren't that comfortable talking about it, which is why I love that you're sharing this real-time experience, which is available for everybody. Even if you're talking about how great the... whatever the sex that you always have is, just start to talk about it, communicate about it.
Yeah.
You know?
Because I think that even if you do end up being like, this is our physical action a lot, just talking about something different and having a conversation, if that's your arousal runway, if you will, it can just really get the juices flowing, like literally.
Exactly. The arousal runway, that shows all about like how we get turned on, because it's not just going to like hit you over the head anymore like it did the first 2 months of the relationship, which is super inspirational. Okay, I love this. I talk a lot as an educator. We're both educators here, but a sex educator, I didn't have a lot of great sex ed. I don't know about you, but it was all fear-based. Like, don't get pregnant, don't get an STD, don't have sex. What do you think that is important for young people you're talking to your kids about? What do we think we need to understand more about sex and sexuality right now?
I think kind of questions you asked me before, which is really finding a healthy relationship with your body. That is the foundation. Because once you have a healthy relationship with your body, you start to respect your body. You start to know what your body wants. You really start to know what you're attracted to. You really start to know whether you're not a pleaser and pleasure yourself. Then you get to going into, once you have like that foundation, then if you get a partner, you kind of have that confidence already set. Of course, there's like, oh my gosh, is this person attracted to me? Or do they find me hot? There's always going to be a little bit of that, but at least you have a foundation and you'll be able to let them, you know, explore with you, if you will.
That's so good.
What else? You know, I just think that like, just having that foundation is key. But I think when it comes to younger people, like having that respect for yourself in some ways can eliminate the fear, because you're like, well, of course we learn about STDs, but I don't want that. But you know what? You might get to a situation. I know plenty of people that had to run to the clinic, you know, and I also believe that the reality is, and this is, most people don't talk about this because they talk about like, oh, don't get an STD. The reality is, if you're super sexual and you don't use protection or you trusted somebody, and the reality is you might have to run to the clinic. And, you know, I just call it the clinic. That's what we used to call it when I was younger. And it's a part of the sex. It's the part of the sex life. But you decided to do this action. But the respect factor will help you get to a point where you can eliminate that things, or like really be able to talk to someone you're going to be intimate with and decide when being unprotected is going to be best for you. It's like, there's so many different levels and layers to you being able to communicate with a person to, you know, kind of eliminate what people have put out there to be fearful. But I do believe it starts with knowing your body, respecting your body, loving your body, being able to pleasure yourself. And then when someone else comes into the mix, really helping them understand you. Because here's the thing. If you're going to be intimate with somebody and you ask them a lot of questions, and you ask them questions about respect, you ask them questions about what they're into, usually the person that, usually, unless they're like a psychopath, usually the person that wants to answer these questions and really dive in and not be afraid, they're the person that's going to respect your body the most. If they're just like, why are you asking all these questions? Like, let's just get it in. Then you're kind of like, well, maybe that's not somebody I really want to be with. That's how I feel the foundation of what we need to teach people.
That is such great advice. It's so true. Let's teach people how to respect each other. Let's teach how to have conversations about sex without the fear. And I love what you're saying, is the partner that's asking all the questions is probably the one that you want to be with, you know? I believe that. So that is such great advice. Thank you for that. Shanti, you're awesome. Thank you so much for all of your advice here and talking to you about all of this. I want to ask you the quickie questions. We ask each guest the 5 quickie questions. Ready?
You can ask me anything you want.
Okay, baby. I know that now. I feel like I want to mix them up for you, but these are the same questions. Ready? What's your biggest turn on?
Oh, can I be really honest on this podcast?
Yes. Sex with Emily.
My biggest turn on is like, I'm a voyeur, like seeing Scott with someone else. That is like real life media, because I find him to be so incredibly attractive that a lot of times we're like this. And sometimes being able to watch like this, I'm like, amen. That's probably not something I should be saying to that, but
I know I love point. It. I get that. That's hot. Biggest turn off.
Oh, hygiene. Bad hygiene. And honestly, my second biggest turn on and my second biggest turn off is like when someone's not kind. Like, I feel like if you're going to be with somebody, if you're a really nice person, I'm super, super turned on, which is why I think one of the reasons I fell in love with Scott, I'm super turned on. But if you're just like cocky and not, I'm like, it's an immediate turn off, immediate.
Yeah, I got you. What makes good sex?
Woo! Oh my gosh. I think what makes good sex for me is having control and being able to slow everything down, whether it's kissing, whether it's oral, whether it's intercourse, whether it's watching something. Like, the slower you go, the longer it can last, and the more, I just feel like If someone's like rushing, I tell Scott, I call people jackrabbits. I'm like, if you're a jackrabbit, you just want to rush through everything. I'm like, this is boring. You know, slow down. Like, let's enjoy the moment. You know what I'm saying?
Oh my God. We're so honestly, we are like seriously very, very similar here. It's exactly it. I always say my best sex advice, go 5 times slower. Like, slow down, Todd.
Right.
Something you would tell your younger self about sex and relationships.
It's going to be okay. I think like just telling myself younger, like it's going to be okay. You don't have to stress through the experience. Kind of just let go and have a good ass time.
God, I want to tell myself that today. I think we tell ourselves that every day too, right? Okay. What's the number one thing you wish everyone knew about sex?
I wish that everyone knew their most heightened way to orgasm is. And the reason why, I love how you giggling at me. The reason why is because if you can tell your spouse how you like the climax, or if you know how to make it, I mean, it is, I'm telling you, like, because some people are like, oh, I came or I didn't come, or like, oh my gosh. And I'm like, wait a minute, find out the way you know how to climax the best. Like, tried 18,000 different ways, but when you get to that one way, you are going to be like, oh my goodness.
Oh my God. Sex with Sean is this show. Sex with Sean and Emily. This is amazing. Oh, you are awesome. You are so talented and sexually motivational, not just in your industry. Amazing. Thank you so much, Sean, for being here. What's going on with you? Where can people find you? What are you excited about? I know you've had some changes.
Well, first of all, before I say that, I want to say thank you, because there are so many people afraid to have this conversation, and I just can't wait to drive people to your podcast and be like, hey guys, I have spoken to a lot of people who listen to me and Scott on our Wine Night podcast or our Wine Night live shows, because they were fearful of it and it helped break down some of those fears. And I just want to send people to you, because I just love the way you really coach people through it and teach people through it. So that's really amazing. So what do I have coming up? Well, we will be starting our Wine Nights up in a couple of months. We move into our new house. I'm really excited about that. So, okay. You know, just follow me on Instagram or one of my social media pages at Sean T, and Matt will follow you there. But in the meantime, also, I would love for people to listen to my podcast, Trust and Believe, where you really kind of get why I am the way that I am and how I've spoken to Emily today. Because I feel like so many people have so many barriers. And on my podcast, Trust and Believe, I really just help you break down any barrier that's holding you back from being 100% authentic to who you are.
Trust and Believe with Sean T. I love it. That's, you know, we're both with the Acast Network, and they like introduce us here, which I love. And it's such a great podcast, and you're doing such important work. And it is like, you just drop in with your guests and you're just so real and honest. So I just knew we'd have a great conversation. So we'll find you in all those places. Thank you for your time. I appreciate you so much. That's it for today's episode. See you on Friday. Thanks for listening to Sex with Emily. Be sure to like, subscribe, and give us a review wherever you listen to the podcast, and share this with a friend or partner. You can find me on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Sex with Emily. Oh, I've been told I give really good email. So sign up at sexwithemily.com. And while you're there, check out my free guides and articles for more ways to prioritize your pleasure. If you'd like to ask me about your sex life, dating, or relationships, call my hotline, 559-TALK-SEX. That's 559-825-5739. Or go to sexwithemily.com/askemily. Special thanks to Acast for powering the Sex with Emily podcast. Was it good for you? Email me, feedback@sexwithemily.com.